Madam Speaker, it's a good bill.
Frankly, I'm embarrassed.
The President of the Senate called a hot mess.
Ole Insider is an educational journey through the Washington State Legislature, following interesting and important bills through the legislative process.
This is a serious matter, Mr. Speaker. We're moving the wrong direction here.
Ole Insider is produced by Positive Intentions Media, hosted by citizen volunteers Erica Engelhart and Jay Fratt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, rising in support.
And it's the right thing to do.
Okay, here we are, the Ole Insider podcast, coming to you live and direct or recorded from Olympia, Washington in the Positive Intentions Media Studios. I am citizen volunteer Jay Fratt, and I'm here with our in-house election expert, fellow citizen volunteer, Erica Engelhart.
Hey, Jay, how you doing?
I am doing A-OK. My life partner said I seemed like I was in a bad mood today.
Uh-oh.
So we're getting through, but apparently an outward perspective is I might be a bit gruff.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks for the heads up.
Yeah, I don't know how that will come across to the audience and yourself, because I think I'm doing just fine. But
you sound like you're doing just fine.
Yeah, all right. So here we are. We're going to discuss a few notes on HB 5608 and HB 2100. We've got those two bills we're going to tackle today. One with just a few notes, and then the other where we covered the in 2100, we covered the committee hearing in the Finance Committee in the House. Is that correct? Are we same page?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so where we left off last week, I was saying there was going to be an update on SB 5068. Sorry if I said HB in the beginning. SB 5068, that's temporary visa hires being allowed in, we'll just say, firefighters and law enforcement. And where we were looking at, we were watching out for a committee hearing or for it to go to the floor of the Senate. And I tracked down, some would say stalked, Senator Holy, who's the ranking Republican member of the of that Law and Justice Committee. And he didn't give me a soundbite, and he seemed like I was putting him on the spot. I will report back that I never heard back from Senator Holy's office. So big red X on them, those snobby senators.
And that's a disappointment.
Yeah, yeah. Then I've always noticed that the House staff and representatives are way more gracious with their time and cordial with their interaction than the Senate side. So that bias continues. However, we did have some breaking news recently where the bill, SB 5068, did go to the floor of the Senate, and it did pass. However, unlike last year where every Republican voted for this bill, this year every Republican voted against it.
Well, it sounds like they were a little more educated maybe this time going around, or they felt a little pressure.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And so as I try to point out to people that are following along that they can all do this themselves, is think of the pressure that applies to the ranking member in that committee who's a member of the Republican caucus. So the Republican caucus, the Republican Senate caucus, is going to take the opinions of the ranking member from that committee very seriously. And I'm stopping him cold, without appointment, on his way into another committee, and I'm asking him about 5068. And in that conversation, I'm mentioning to him that every Republican voted for it next year, and I'm looking for a soundbite if they're going to flip and vote against it this year. That's the kind of pressure that gets these votes.
Absolutely.
And so, but you pointed it out as education. So here's where we're at in this process if we compare it to last year. Last year, we really didn't find out about it until Keith Swank mentioned it on Twitter after it had already passed the Senate and it was coming to the House. And then we did a full court press. Myself, yourself, a couple other citizen volunteers did a full court press to really pressurize the House chamber, both Republicans and Democrats, to see the danger of this bill, and to the other side to point out the danger of voting for it. In particular, last year we spoke to, I can think of, Representative Bernoski, who's a big firefighter union guy. And next thing you know, I've got the union lobbyist hitting me up on Twitter, slandering me, saying I'm saying I'm representing the firefighters union. And it caused a bit of a stir for people that are used to not having conflict with citizens engaged in this process. So to your point about education, now this year we've got the Republicans on the Senate side to vote against it, kind of meaningless because it's still passed anyways, but we're way farther ahead of the game this year than we were last year.
I would definitely agree with you there.
And one thing I'll say, so that's it on 5068. That's where we're at. We're going to have a show about this bill coming up. One thing I'm tracking down, and I'm working with others, I'm trying to give other YouTubers kind of the ball on this one, because I'm pointing out, if you go back to our preview show for this session, our first episode of this season, I was pointing out agency request bills by Nick Brown, our attorney general, and I am seeing some really troubling picture when you put these bills, if you consider them pieces and you consider the overall legislation a puzzle, when you start plugging these pieces into the puzzle, I'm really seeing a very concerning picture, and we might have a special show that kind of pulls this vision that I see from these agency request bills that Nick Brown has proposed 2 years in a row now, some last year, now some fresh this year, that all kind of work together, and they're very dangerous. So I'm going to wait until I've got a little bit more written out on that, and I have put some other kind of, I would say, more famous or more shows with a larger following than ourselves. I've kind of put them onto it, so we're going to have to wait and see. But as far as 5068 goes, we're going to continue. That's our bone, and we're going to keep gnawing on that bone as long as it's alive.
Absolutely. And I do want to just point something out, because you mentioned, you know, how you went down there and you talked to the senator and you put a little pressure on, but it really wasn't, you know, a whole lot of stuff you had to do. Anybody can do this stuff. So all of our listeners, if they want to get active, they can easily put the pressure on too. They just have to know that we're watching, you know, and then they will, you know, think about how they're voting, and they'll know that people are paying attention. I think that's really all it takes to have an impact here. So
correct. And
I just want to encourage everyone to do that.
Yeah. And I use the term stalking, you know, of course I don't mean that by its legal definition, but open source information, you can, you know, I spotted the ranking member on the Republican side in that committee. So, okay, so there's the most important Republican caucus member in the committee that's hearing this bill. I looked at his schedule. I saw what committee he was a part of, and I saw when the committee had a hearing, and they have to walk from the one building to the other. So I knew when to watch for Senator Holey to walk from one building to another. And again, this was very cordial. It was a very cordial visit with him.
Perfect. Sounds good.
As I stood on the side of the road with my phone open and a picture of Senator Holey trying to make sure I got the right one.
It's a fair game, though.
Absolutely. That is open source intelligence put to operations tactical use. All right.
Job well done.
Enough of that. Let's talk about the main bill that we're here to discuss today, the one you're interested in. Go ahead. Bring us into HB 2100.
Okay. So this bill, essentially what it is trying to do is it's creating they're calling it an excise tax for large operating companies, and it is related to the amount that they pay their employees. Should we just go ahead and play that clip where she describes a little bit, or do you want me to go a little bit farther here?
No, that's fine. You've described it very well. So it's based on income, but it's a payroll tax, and it's only on...
Correct.
And the one thing I would point out in this clip we're going to show, it's a short clip of OPR, Office of Program Research, lawyer, reading the bill, but it's very short because it's just the specifics. And one thing Eric and I are running into this year are a lot of original bills that are being heard in committee. It's like they walk into committee and they already, through backroom dealing, already know that there's a substitute that they're going to vote for and or put in place. Wouldn't you say we've encountered that quite a bit this year?
Absolutely. And I, you know, I don't know if that's some kind of tactic or if it has to do with maybe, you know, some pressure that they're getting on other ends. But definitely we're seeing that quite a bit. So if you wanted to look to see if there are amendments or proposed amendments, you just have to go and look at the committee materials on the website and you can find it there.
Yes. And so, you know, and Erica was going to testify on a bill last week and found out there was a sub, and it can be kind of confusing. So you're showing up to testify because of this one thing, but that one thing gets solved in advance, but the public doesn't necessarily know about it. And that happened in this case. This excise tax that Erica's talking about, $2,100, was going to be on like 98% of employers in Washington state. It had very low thresholds. And that sparked quite the controversies, and so they raised the limits. Here are the details as read by Office of Program Research.
Under House Bill 2100, beginning July 1st, 2026, a payroll expense tax is levied on large operating companies engaged in businesses within Washington. Madam Chair, there's a proposed sub. Would you like me to brief based on the proposed sub?
Yes, please.
Okay, the tax is 5% of the total annual employee wages that exceed the Social Security wage limit. The tax is imposed and paid by the employer. Under the proposed sub, a large operating company must employ 250 or more people and have at least $7 million in annual payroll. A large operating company does not include a healthcare facility, a healthcare provider, or a health system that operates one or more hospitals. In addition, it does not include school districts, local governments, quasi-municipal corporations, political subdivisions, or state agencies. An employer may not make any deductions from employee wages in order to pay this tax. The tax would be administered by the Employment Security Department, and the Employment Security Department would annually set the employee wage amount to be excluded from the payroll expense tax, which would be equal to the maximum wages subject to the tax under the Social Security Act. A credit is allowed against the state payroll expense tax for any eligible city payroll expense tax paid by the employer. The amount of credit is equal to the total number of eligible city payroll expense tax remitted to the city during the prior state tax reporting period.
Okay, and that part at the end, there was a lot of minutia of detail. That has to do with the fact that a payroll tax, a payroll slash income tax, a payroll tax based on income, has already been initiated in the city of Seattle by the city council, city of Seattle council. And so there is already this tax in Seattle jurisdiction. And so that's kind of how this bill would relate with that bill.
Yes. So, and I do want to warn everyone that this entire hearing was rather boring. But, you know, we did make it through it. But there's a few technical issues that I'm having with the bill. So, for example, when you read the bill analysis, it says that there's... it says that 51, so basically what it does is it creates this Well Washington Fund within the bill. So this Well Washington Fund is to fund Medicaid, SNAP or food stamps, and then they think they included education grants or something. But they say that this the money from this tax would go 51% to the Well Washington Fund and 49% to the general fund. But then when in the the fiscal note, I'm sorry, which I also found in the committee materials, the fiscal note, it said that it was expected to produce, it was going to add $7.6 billion to the general fund and $4.2 billion to the Well Washington Fund, which is not that 51-49%.
And that's just for the 27-29 biennium. So I'm very confused about that part.
And I believe that's based on the original bill, not the sub.
Yeah, and see, this is where it gets all convoluted, too, because you notice they were willing to read the substitute bill in the committee, but the substitute bill still doesn't even show up on the main page for the bill. You have to go dig for it. So that's, you know, it's just kind of a mess. And then another discrepancy I noticed was they say that it's that the 5% starts when you're over the maximum of the additional Social Security taxable amount, which is like, you know, 170 something thousand. But then I kept hearing them reference 125,000. So, you know, I'm not sure which one that is the correct number there either.
That is the confusion, because the city of Seattle tax is over 125,000.
Okay.
So this tax would be at that 170 some odd thousand rate.
Okay.
That's where it would kick. Whereas the Seattle payroll tax kicks at 125.
So where do they get the credit from, the 125 or from the 170?
So the credit is discussed is they're allowing employers in Seattle to use that 125 as a credit. So some of the people across the state are upset. They view that the rest of the state would be subsidizing businesses in Seattle. However, Representative Scott, who's the primary sponsor of the bill, points out that there are more employers in Seattle, and they would still be paying that tax between that 125 and 170.
Gotcha. Now,
so they would only get the credit for that 125.
Got it. Okay. I guess, I don't know. I'm just not a fan overall of the whole idea, so I feel like I'm being a little resistant to the whole thing. But
let's zoom out for 1 second.
Okay.
Then,
yeah.
Because let's discuss kind of some of the controversies of this bill, and
can I interrupt you?
Yeah, of course.
So I do want to point out that it was very clear when the sponsor was introducing the bill that this is all stemming from the federal HR1, and the, you know, that they're afraid that they're going to be losing funding for these certain programs, because we all know that there's been a lot of talk about, you know, states losing funding if they're including, for example, non-citizens in certain benefits and stuff like that. So that's where this whole bill is trying to fill the gaps that they believe they're going to lose the funding from the federal government.
Yeah, it all has to do with a very confusing, conflating situation where a lot of our benefit programs are subsidized with federal dollars. And the feds have said you can't use those federal dollars to support undocumented neighbors, communities, illegal immigrants, that sort of thing, asylees. And the state is now trying to come up with revenue to take the place of those federal funds they expect to be taken away.
Exactly.
And you can read in, you know, all the basically the feds are trying to say, hey, you need to be good stewards of these federal dollars. And it's been like a pinata party at somebody's Sweet 16, where they've just been spending federal dollars like crazy, you know, constantly hitting that piggy bank with a big stick. So they're trying to force some fiscal discipline. And this is a way that they are coming up with a scheme to replace that money, to your point.
Yes.
It also speaks to the broader lens of our tax system in Washington State, because what this bill is it's a competing revenue-driving bill based on payroll tax, but the incomes within the payroll tax that's going to compete with Bob Ferguson's millionaire's tax.
Right.
So what I'm seeing is it's like competing factions on how we're going to increase the size of the pie. Meanwhile, how many bills are we covering this year that speak about controls on spending, audits, verifying that these tax dollars are being spent in the way that the law distributes them? How many?
I have no idea.
I don't think we're covering a single bill. I don't think the Democrats are bringing any bills that are geared towards better
responsible spending.
Yes, better fiscal discipline within the spending. And so this broader conversation, as we've been through now decades of where government growth is considered economic growth, we're kind of reaching this crossing point where the spending by the government is becoming a giant part of the thing that drives our economy. And it's a very scary point. And so they're expecting to lose these federal dollars, so they need to come up, instead of tightening their belts or becoming more fiscally disciplined, they're seeking...
Or following the rules.
Following the own rules that they've stipulated, right? So in other words, allowing an auditor to actually do the job of auditing and oversight, to actually oversee in this Democrat-dominated government that we have, where... you know, Democrats are the heads of oversight boards, and Democrats are the heads of every state agency. They have trouble going against each other, if you will.
Yes.
So this bill is that payroll tax that's based on income. Bob Ferguson's hidden secret millionaire's tax, in other words, it hasn't been brought out yet. Nobody knows what that is. That is also coming. So we're at this scary point where, are both of these going to go through, or are these competing bills to increase the pie, increase the revenue of government? And so this, I'll get to my point. So this is a broader perspective where they're almost looking at government like a private business, where they are growing, they're growing the size, they're growing their revenue. However, a private business has to always keep track of their costs. Right. And where the money is going. So they're not taking care of the discipline of the dollars being effective and accounted for, but they're constantly growing that revenue source. And so that's one scary point that we're at. This bill brings forth a lot of overarching issues.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's talk about the fact that it's going to put a lot of employers, you know, we could be driving away a lot of big employers with something like this. If they can, you know, move somewhere else, have the same kind of income, you know, hire either new people or move those people, you know, to a new place if they want to keep them, we're going to lose a lot of business.
Absolutely. And they used that example of Amazon, that when Seattle put forth this payroll tax, apparently Amazon moved a crap ton of employees from Seattle to Bellevue.
Exactly.
And that was in direct relation to that Seattle excise tax, aka payroll tax, bill passing. So what Representative Scott said was, he said, well, we don't see an impact because the revenue from that tax has grown year over year since Seattle created that payroll tax. So in other words, they're not seeing actual economic drivers of job growth or anything like that. They're actually looking at the revenue from the tax as their metric of whether or not it was successful.
So their income is more important than, you know, whether there's jobs available for people.
Yes.
That's unfortunate.
And so here we are at this stage where, you know, these major philosophical conflicts, and I want to continue this overarching story, because what they're really trying to do, and what they use this language all the time, is regressive versus progressive. Okay. And we've come to think of, you know, progressives as, you know, they want to indoctrinate our children. They want to allow 13-year-olds to make their own medical decisions, you know, all this LGBTQ plus immigrant rights stuff. But at the heart of the philosophy, it is progressive taxation versus regressive taxation. And in the heart of their philosophy, they view a sales tax as regressive. They view income tax as progressive. But in our state, the way our state works and operates as constitutionalized a long time ago by our legislators, we have a sales tax and an income tax is against our constitution. So what's happening is what they should do and what they would need to do is propose a huge sweeping bill that essentially replaced the sales tax system that we have and replaced it with the income tax, with their income tax schemes, if you will. But they're not doing that. They just keep running these quasi-income tax proposals in without adjusting the very philosophical regressive taxes that they believe exist.
Right. So, yes, I would agree with that. You know, I think that wouldn't we have to have a constitutional amendment in order to do that, which would have to go to a ballot and be voted on, I believe. So that's why they're coming up with these tricky ways, you know, this they're calling it an excise tax and all this stuff rather than what it is, an income tax.
Yes, that what I just spoke about, again, if I'm taking the other side and I want to institute a progressive tax. And to be fair and objective, which I don't believe they are, but to be fair and objective, we would have to get rid of the sales tax. So we'd be replacing, it would require 2/3 vote. So, and they don't have 2/3. And Democrat lawmakers have actually spoke about that. Like they're seeking that 2/3 so they can go and adjust anything they want within our state constitution and our systems.
You know, I have heard that before as well, so I think you're absolutely right.
You know, but what's being avoided, unfortunately, is they keep blaming Trump. To your point, it's all about these federal dollars being taken away as if they've got a right to these dollars and to be spending them in the willy-nilly, unaudited, uncontrolled way that's happened. You know, I mean, just look at the homeless industrial complex that's been created over the last decade. We're talking about billions of dollars, and yet the homeless population has grown.
It's growing, yeah.
So again, objectivity of just a normal person in Washington state that says, hey, when are we going to actually look at the effectiveness of this dollars? They will not. They are blind to effectiveness and they are keen-eyed on growing the pie, the government and the pie of revenue.
Yes, absolutely.
So and so there we are. That's 2100. I will buttress this by saying what I noticed is that there is no committee hearing, executive session, or anything else scheduled on this bill. There was no vote taken. And so I'm curious if it's languishing right now in committee and being killed, or if this is just an example of what a busy session looks like and it'll come in due time.
Well, we can keep our fingers crossed. But one thing that people can do, if it does end up on the floor for a vote, you can contact your representatives and let them know how you think they should vote on it.
Yes, absolutely. Especially Democrat representatives as well. Any representative, the most powerful tool are the ones that represent you.
Yes.
There are zero obstructions from you getting through to those people because they do represent you. You go to the WaLeg. What's the website's URL again?
WA.leg.gov.
That's right. WA.leg.gov. L-E-G, ledge. You go there and you simply put in your address. You verify that you're a constituent of a representative, and boom, that message goes right to them.
Yes.
If you want to contact legislatures that are outside of your system. There are telephone numbers available. You can try to go through an LA legislative assistant and get a meeting that way, or you can be entrepreneurial, use some open intel like I do, and catch them walking on campus. Not everybody has the ability to go to Olympia day after day and learn the routines, but I'm telling you, in just one day, if you could take one day a week or one day a month, within no time, you'll kind of see that these people are very accessible. They walk around. Again, unlike the Democrats, we're not telling you to go and get in their face and cause a commotion. What I'm saying is be very cordial, and they are available.
Yeah.
I've had conversations with Rep. Scott about 5068 just walking on the Capitol campus. We reported that last year. And then, you know, if you do live in an Olympia, keep an eye out late at night, because sometimes you might see a legislator in that environment as well. I ran into Representative Bernoski cruising through the Brotherhood Bar in downtown Olympia late at night last week. So you never know when the opportunities arise, but it's good to know what they look like, what their names are, be respectful, and catch their ear.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right, and I'm glad that you know, are emphasizing the be respectful and be cordial, because that's, you know, they're not going to listen to you if you're screaming at them or if you're doing, you know, anything crazy. They're just normal people. We can have regular conversations and you can get your point across. It's, you know, pretty straightforward.
And even if you don't consider them to be normal people, you can catch their ear much better through cordiality.
Yes.
And then like I did with Senator Holy, I was educated. I mentioned him. I knew he was the ranking member. I knew he was seeing 5068. I wanted an update because I expected it to go to the floor. And then I also specifically mentioned that they voted with it last year, and I wanted to know if he was going to recommend the caucus flip that vote this year. So you're not just going up to them and saying, "Burr, you're indoctrinating our children. Trick or jabs." So, you know, you go with specifics cordially, and you can
with
have
a goal.
With a goal, and you can have influence. All right. That's it. I'm sure we missed something on 2100 we were going to talk about. There are so many things that it touches on. Can you think of anything else for this particular episode?
I just want to say I hope that we don't hear anything more about it. That's my personal opinion, but we'll see what happens.
I kind of like the debate. Regressive, progressive tax policy is a very interesting debate. I appreciate that this is also the inside word is, so for people who stayed all the way to this 30-some-odd minute mark of the show, the inside word is that there are some dramatics in the Democratic caucus that are going on behind the scenes, as people have factions within the Democratic Party have different ways to solve this revenue shortfall. And again, they only see this as a revenue shortfall. Know the people you're dealing with. They don't see this as wasteful spending of a constant, ineffective, non-governmental office, non-profit grift. They don't see that. They only see a revenue shortfall. And there is divisions happening within that Democratic caucus on how to solve that shortfall.
Yep.
So you know, and again, so if we can inject ourselves as citizens with common sense issues, we can amplify and or inject reason and objectivity and common sense into that divisive situation.
Absolutely.
All right.
Well, I was just going to say, I think we're going to probably wrap it up for this episode, but we really appreciate you sticking around and listening through this whole thing. It's kind of been a longer one, but we hope that you've enjoyed it, and hopefully you feel inspired to get out and go talk to your representatives.
Yeah. We'll talk next time. Peace out.
Bye.
Let us take a step back and let us reason together.
The legislative process can be intimidating. Let's go through it together.
If you could focus on the policy and not motives, please proceed.
Like and subscribe to Ole Insider on your favorite podcasting app. All resources and show notes will be available for each episode at oleinsider.com.
Mr. Speaker, I've stood up on the House floor repeatedly this year.
You can follow Erica Engelhart on X at For the Good, Jay Fratt on X at Jay Fratt, and Positive Intentions Media on X at PubSec Media.
It is our duty.
I really want to say thank you.